Back in Oprah and Friends, XM 156 is Dr. Oz. You know, I've got Michael Gilbert on. I've been calling him a physical therapist. I do want to thank Robin, our producer, for giving me that information. Unfortunately, it's not correct. In fact, Michael Gilbert is actually a graduate of a student of life. Yes. I understand, and which is just fine. And I'm
certified in Rolfing. I've been teaching yoga for 20 years. So
I'm having worked a lot with physical therapists who are telling me the exact same things you're telling me. I'll play physical therapist today, but I do appreciate you correcting that. Let's talk a little bit about John St. Augustine again. So we were talking about his posture, embarrassing.
Stop. Dr. Oz, let's talk about posture. Michael, you ready for this?
I'm listening.
Okay. So when Dr. Oz comes into studio promptly at 6:30 Eastern time to do the shows, and we sit here for quite a while doing shows, I notice his posture changes over the time. See how he just crossed his leg there?
Like it's supposed
he's
to.
No. He's doing that for your benefit.
That's right.
But I want to know.
So he doesn't move when I'm not here.
I know,
what
he
you're
moves
saying.
Constantly.
Right.
He
I want to know what it means when he sits spread eagle with his legs over both sides of the chair. What does that mean?
This is called the De'Arian pose.
I think we say that's good. It's not on TV.
That's why we can do radio.
It's the beauty of radio.
That's exactly right. Well, it's not beautiful from this end.
This really feels good, I got to say.
Well, you have to turn the camera away, I guess, is all I can say.
Yeah, well.
But I think John wanted to share his yoga experience.
The yoga
with
thing
you.
Is just, wow.
You put John through yoga. He said it was a near-death experience.
It was. And I wasn't prepared. Aren't you supposed to prepare people for this? You just said
well,
you were going to do this?
What level of class
yeah,
did
what
you
was
go
it?
For?
It was a quarter of the way through the first sun salutation, he was out.
Oh, I don't even know what that means.
I mean, basically, he got into a push-up position and collapsed.
Lisa, you were a witness.
Taking the
that's
hardest
not
class
true.
You could.
No, actually, he did a very good job.
Thank you. What level were we working at? I don't even know.
So you brought him to class? You were the inspiration?
It was at their house. It was their class.
Well, we talked to class.
Captive.
It was,
you taught the class.
Well, here's what we did. We put him to the class. We put our 7-year-old through.
Oh,
Oliver. And so Oliver.
The beauty of yoga is you can take any pose and do it at your own level.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter. You can do a down dog as a beginner or as someone who's been doing yoga for 20 years.
Well, to bring a little serious note to this, what makes yoga different than stretching would be a good, so people could understand this.
Mm-hmm.
Stretching's been around in this country for a long time, and it hasn't done for back pain and knee pain and a lot of problems that people complain about as yoga has.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between yoga and stretching and weightlifting and a lot of these other techniques is that it concentrates on the opening of the pelvis and the opening of the rib cage. So when you go to gyms, you see a lot of people doing a lot of core work, working the front of the body and tensing it. Well, that makes the rib cage and the pelvis tense.
Right, closes them.
Whereas you go for extension, you're hooking the arms and legs to the back of the body. The front is not tensing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very important concept, because what you're doing is when you hook the arms and legs to the back of the body, you're making it in what I call the power of the spring. When you hook the arms and legs to the back of the body, it stays a spring. Whereas in the front, it doesn't. So I've never seen a baby in a crib doing ab work stand up on two legs. And until I do, I'm not going to change my premise. What I do see them doing is lying on their stomach and they're arching their back. Or even when you take a 6-month-old baby and you put them in a pool where they go under the water, mm-hmm. It's a beautiful, if you take shots of babies underwater, their whole back arches and their arms and legs pull behind them.
Well, they're trying to get out.
they have a nice look on their face. I don't think so. I think they're saying, I remember this.
It's called oxygen hunger. I need to breathe.
No, I think they're enjoying it.
My last thought was this. What amazed me most about the yoga thing is that it didn't take long. Oz, remember you had, once you positioned me right, for my hips to release.
Yeah,
it really
right.
didn't take
That's
long.
True.
I was very surprised by that. And the other thing that was so surprising is how much it hurt the next day.
Well, you're just not,
doing,
you're,
well,
you're
yeah.
not used to sitting in a chair with your legs spread
no,
eagle, right?
No, no.
You need to keep doing it, John, to open
I
up
I did. Just
more
this morning, I was Lotus and Buddha for about 4 hours.
Well, for the listeners, this is actually, I find, a very useful place to start. You know, the old-fashioned touch your toe move. But next time you do it, lean forward slowly, being aware of how your body is responding to it. And for most folks, they think they're done when their fingers get somewhere close to their knees. But what you really want to do, at least when I do it, mm-hmm. is actually sort of feel the hips give, feel the hips relax and release, so you can actually become more of an acute angle as opposed to sort of a hemicircle.
Right. You don't want to move. You're not bending from the lower back. You're
exactly.
bending from the hip joint.
And that's what's often lost. And that's the pose
right.
that got John off a little bit. And once he realized that and felt something
right.
that he hadn't felt in a while, They're nice. Now, Mike Gilbert's got a bunch of myths. I want to go through these. There were many of them I actually didn't get, but just as you helped explain. No, and you did. You helped explain the opening the chest and the pelvis as opposed to what we normally do. I think these
Well,
will
there's
help.
Two ways to find a core.
Okay.
See, everybody goes to a gym and they think there's only way to create a core. The idea of bringing a core and pulling everything together.
Core of the body.
Well, core of the body, mm-hmm. tensing it.
Right.
And what I try and tell everybody is there's two ways to find a core. That isn't a wrong way, but it's not a good behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to sit in your chair, and this is where I get people with back pain, and they're tensing their belly and tightening their butt, and yet, because that's what I was taught. That's how I find a core. Well, you do that for 6 hours at a computer, you're going to have back pain. The idea is that you create a core that opens
mm-hmm.
versus closes.
Right.
There's two ways to find a core. The whole idea of pulling the core together came because people were doing Pilates and they're dancers and they're ice skaters. When you pull a core together, you can spin faster.
Hmm.
But you're not spinning when you're sitting in a chair.
So how do you strengthen your core if it's not through working your belly?
Well, but it's not that you need to strengthen the core. The core is not based on strength. It's based on surface area.
Yeah, but if you're a woman, you don't want more surface
well,
area
that's
on
a
your
beautiful,
belly.
And that's I call that fashion, and that's what I'm saying. If you want to go after fashion, that's wonderful.
How many women do you know that don't? Let me just hang on.
How many
out.
Guys don't?
Michael Gilbert only works with men.
Yeah,
only,
right.
Only accepts male clients.
The men don't care so much about their belt. They just put their belt
oh,
a little
yes,
lower,
they do.
You know, and they
no,
hang over the top.
No, that's not true. That's not true anymore. I would have said 10 years ago. You get a lot more hassled for that than you ever do nowadays. I mean, nowadays
so
than you ever
did
before.
So are you just recommending soft bellies?
No, what I'm saying is if you're sitting at a computer, you have to worry about pulling your belly in and being fashionable
depends
for
who's
6 hours.
At you.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, then it's an issue. When you're on the beach, you're in the club, that's one thing. But when you're sitting for hours on end in your car driving, and people still work this way, that's not. Well, that's when it becomes a behavior. It's like Chinese foot binding. I mean, it's not good for you.
And with yoga, when you breathe, you don't want to hold your stomach. You want to relax your stomach.
Yeah, you relax your stomach.
Do deep
you want to relax your rib cage.
Yeah.
I mean, some people come to me and they say, oh, I've been taught to belly breathe. And I'm like, belly breathing's wonderful, but don't think chest breathing is bad then. You want right. to be able to breathe through the whole spine. You don't see babies in cribs just breathing through their belly. The whole body breathes.
Right.
And that's the whole issue is that in gyms, everybody's doing all this ab work and the rib cage is tense and then they wonder why they have neck pain.
Talk to me about energy a little bit. You say that maybe it's possible we have too much energy. What do you mean by that?
Well, the idea is that managing energy is a way of decreasing intensity. And if you have too much, the system overloads. The best example is like Lance Armstrong. He was a wonderful example of somebody that learned to manage energy.
Mm-hmm.
Before he had his cancer, he never won the Tour de France. And he'd ridden many times, and he was called a masher. His riding was all about intensity. That's how he trained. That's how he rode. That's everything he did. He got cancer. He had to get rid of the intensity and train for surface area. In other words, what he did is he exercised himself for revolutions per minute, how often he could turn the wheel with the least amount of effort.
Mm-hmm.
Thereby, he increased his intensity over time, and he won the Tour de France. So he's managing his energy. And that's why he was so successful at the end, is he didn't go any faster than he needed to go to win the race just in front of the person behind him.
But so go through this one more time, because as a masher, the implication then is your
it's intensity.
But you're flailing a tiny bit. You're wasting energy. You're losing a little bit. Is that the right way to understand it?
He was great at winning like a leg of the race, but he wasn't winning the whole Tour de France.
Hmm.
And he had to change his workout from one of intensity to really looking at how to be efficient, managing energy. And don't get me wrong, it's not that he doesn't have some physiological attributes that everybody would love to have, his VO level and all that kind of
right,
stuff.
His VO2 max is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing.
He just doesn't waste any oxygen.
But still, with all that, I mean, he was younger, now he was older, he didn't have cancer, he still didn't win. He learned how to manage, whether it's mental, emotional, or physical, it's still the whole thing. So he's a great example of managing energy.
Another myth. You talked a little bit about the fact that Newton understands chronic pain, but we might not. And they say that chemistry is not the answer to chronic pain. In fact, physics is.
Well, this is where the problem is. Chemistry is wonderful for the things it does, but it doesn't answer every question. So what I'm trying to get people to understand is when they when you want to look at it from a point of view of physics, what you're trying to do is decrease tension and increase surface area. So let's take yoga, for example, when you're doing downward facing dog.
Right.
Do you want to spread your fingers or do you want to keep them together?
Spread them.
Spread them. Surface area. Why? It takes pressure off the joint. So if you look at all the, and that's true for every joint system. That's what I'm saying. In yoga, opening of the pelvis and the rib cage is the difference. Surface area. And this is where all the alternative medicines could be understood. What they do is they decrease tension, so they increase surface area. Botox is another example. It's been used for getting rid of migraine headaches, TMJ, back pain. There was even a doctor in Canada that used it to get rid of club feet in 25 to 45 kids without any surgery.
Really?
Yes.
How does it work?
Well, the Botox cuts off the signal of the nerve to the muscle, and the muscle relaxes. So then what they do is use massage therapy. They'll put them in braces and work them, but it's not very long. And the point is they get full elasticity of the lower leg compared to surgery.
Right.
And the whole key here is to develop elasticity. And this is what I'm trying to say, is that elasticity and health are the same thing. As you increase your elasticity, you're decreasing your tension. The problem is everybody has too much tension. So decreasing it, it's just physics. And then you could really understand how all these alternative medicines are doing the same thing from different angles. Botox is a wonderful way to show that process, because it's showing how all these diseases, illnesses, and idea being broken are the same thing. Because if we're getting rid of migraine headaches, TMJ, back pain, club feet, tensor fasciitis in the foot. I mean, I've seen so many cases. And you hear this with...
alternative medicine. I love it.
Well, I'm just saying it's... I'm not going to advocate it because it does have a risk factor, I would say. But it still is able to show how alternative medicine works rather than saying it's a placebo effect, which I never understood.
Right.
But we have to use physics, not chemistry. You can't do it any other way.
Yeah, that's interesting because
Surface area.
You know, tension and surface area become... important issues after surgery a lot as well, because folks tense up.
Completely. But it's not them. They're not doing it mentally.
Right.
It's the reaction of the brainstem physiology. It's a flexion reflex.
It is. You've been traumatized. It's how you deal with it.
It's the body.
You close off.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a time bit with Michael Gilbert now, who's visiting us, a graduate of the School of Life, as he self-describes himself, about flicker fusion. Now, flicker fusion, I know what it is, I think. When you're looking at a movie screen...
Yes.
And they take it to a different number of frames than you're normally seeing it at, usually slowing it down. So you begin to actually appreciate that you're seeing frames moving in front of you rather than a constant buzz.
There was an article in the Science Times just this past Tuesday on attentional blink, where meditation, they used to think attentional blink was something that was set. And
What's attentional blink for everybody listening?
When you're... Well, the test that they did is they shined like 20 shots of cats on a screen, and they put two dogs right next to the pictures of two dogs. So you have a shot of 20 cats going across, and they put one picture of a dog and another picture right next to each other. Well, when you're watching the screen, you'll see all the cats, and everybody will pick up on the one dog, but they don't pick up on the second dog. So they'll have the people meditate, and after they meditate, then they can actually pick up on both dogs. So they're able to see more in that given moment.
Got it.
And that's attentional blink. Now, to understand it better is to understand how you work in a movie theater. When you go to the movie theater and you watch the movie go by, it goes by at 25 frames per second. When it goes by at 18 frames per second, it's a slideshow. Well, this is true for all your sense organs. If I touch you 18 times a second and I get faster and faster and faster up to 25, it'll feel like I'm touching you, but I'm not. That's also true with hearing. If I play a note and I play it faster than 18 times a second, you'll think you're hearing a steady sound, but you're not. Now, when it gets really interesting is you understand insects. And where you were talking about bees the other day with this gentleman about disappearing.
Right.
Bees, mosquitoes, and flies all code at 200 times a second. So if you were showing them Gone with the Wind,
mm-hmm.
you would have to turn it up to over 200 frames per second for them to see a beautiful movie.
Got it.
So when you have a mosquito on my arm and I put somebody that meditates and someone is having a nervous breakdown and I bring my hand down to swat all of them,
mm-hmm.
the mosquito would see my hand 200 times a second. He gets away.
Right.
The person that meditates changes their coding so it's at a higher level. Attentional blank, that thing in the Science Times shows. They will see it maybe 22 times a second. They can get away. But the person having a nervous breakdown only sees it 5 times a second. They can't get away. That's why you see people that are overloaded all the time say, the world's going too fast. Whereas people that meditate will always say the world's going slower. So you can change your flicker fusion or attentional blink.
And you do that personally, for example, through a meditative process?
Meditation, breathing slower, focusing on the exhalation versus the inhalation.
Mm-hmm.
The slower the breathing, you reset the brainstem. Managing your muscular tension, you reset your brainstem. Brainstem is how you get your muscle overall muscle tonus. It's the coding of the whole, the flicker fusion effect. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if just to drive into your own personal practices very briefly.
Yeah.
And it's the last question, and then I'll release you from the purgatory
sure.
of our studio. You get up in the morning. What do you do?
When I get up in the morning, I'll do a little bit of yoga, upward dog, downward dog.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on my breathing. When I wake up in the morning, even before I get to bed, I'm going to focus on my breathing just to make that shift.
Okay, make the focus on exhalation, not inhalation.
Yeah.
You keep going.
You're getting up in the morning. You want to focus on getting your body and shifting gears.
Okay. Then you sort of get up and go to work and whatever you're going
to
do.
Do whatever I'm doing. During the day, I'll always make time sometime during the day to sit down, even if it's on a subway and I'm going downtown, to take the time to recalibrate myself.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on calming down, watching my heart rate so it's not high, getting it lower. Anytime during the day you can do something like that. Take a class.
Got it.
On turning down the volume rather than turning it up. And that's something that yoga does much more than any other program, is on this idea of working on staying calm in the face of life versus I got to get it up and working harder.
And at night before you go to bed?
Same thing. Take the time to shift gears.
Michael Gilbert, thank you very much for joining us on Oprah and Friends. When we come back, we're going to take some of your calls and a few other insights from this week.